welcome to another episode of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. A progressive and populist insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining show on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people and not just the elite few. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters from his mid-Michigan attic, it's time for the award-winning Pat Johnston. It's all yours, Pat.
Welcome to another edition of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am Pat Johnston, and breaking news as of this recording, and this poll was just released about 2 hours prior to recording this episode. According to a brand new Mitchell Research poll, which is part of MERS News, in Michigan's Democratic primary race for the U.S. Senate, Dr. Abdul El-Sayed, the progressive, is now up to 42% support, while Miss APAC Congresswoman Haley Stevens is at 33%, and State Senator Mallory McMorrow is down to 6%? 6%? Huh. Now, this poll says the progressive and Medicare for All Dr. Abdul is leading the women's vote with 51% compared to Stevens's 35% and McMorrow's 5%. Very interesting there. And Dr. Abdul is winning the 18 to 44-year-olds by a whopping 86% to Stevens' 3% and McMorrow's 0? Wow. Okay, so those numbers are good for those of us in the progressive movement here in Michigan, but I decided to go back because, hey, look, it's the old journalist in me, and I just wanted to go back and see how Mitchell Research did with, let's say, Michigan's governor's race back in 2022. And with 3 weeks left in that race between Democrat Gretchen Whitmer and MAGA Republican Tudor Dixon, you remember her, Mitchell had the race in a statistical dead heat with Whitmer leading just 49 to 47%. Of course, we now know that Whitmer ended up winning that race by 11 points. So that's not a good look for Mitchell Research polling, let's be honest. However, you can still look at trends. You know, you can still do that with polls. And the trends in other polls have shown Dr. Abdul taking the lead while Stevens is holding steady in second place and State Senator McMorrow losing some ground. Now, do I believe Mallory McMorrow's at 6% support throughout the state? I mean, that would be shocking, utterly shocking. I'd say, if I had to guess, you know, Mallory's somewhere between 13 to 19% support, if I had to guess, but her numbers have been falling in other polls. Now, the McMorrow campaign contacted MERS News, which is what I would call somewhat of a center-right kind of a news site. It's not full Trumpian by any extent of the imagination, but it tends to be a little right of center. Anyway, McMorrow's campaign contacted MERS News to take the poll down due to what it calls discrepancies. And according to Politico, MERS News's editor, Kyle Mullen, who I've cited here a few times through the years with his columns from the City Pulse, decided to stop the poll from being published in MERS. Mullen said that after talking with other pollsters, he said he decided to stop it and told Mitchell's head pollster that he wouldn't post it on the website. And look, with Kyle Mullen, sometimes I've agreed with some of his takes, and sometimes I haven't. But I don't think he's some kind of hard right guy. He seems like he believes in journalism. So I'll take him at his word. Now, according to Politico, McMorrow's campaign reached out to MERS after they noticed odd things about the data, including that 0% of black voters were undecided in the race, 0 or 1% of voters in Detroit and its metro area were undecided, while other parts of the state had undecided voters at 25%, 48%, and even 54%, and that McMorrow was at just 5% support in her home base of Oakland County. Again, 5% support. I doubt it's that low. Look, I'm just trying to be fair, trying to be honest here, okay? So I'd like to say that some of those numbers seem a little off. I'll wait for more reputable polls such as Epic MRA and a Detroit News poll before really weighing in on some final judgments here. However, is it really that surprising that Dr. Abdul is leading Gen Z and millennial voters by wide margins? Is it really that much of a stretch? Other polls have shown similar results, so to me, that's pretty consistent with other polls. Have other polls shown McMorrow's support dropping or fading a bit over the past month or so? Yeah, it has. Again, just follow the trends. Is complaining and having a certain poll blocked by a campaign make that campaign look like it's afraid that it's failing without any chance of recovery? Yeah, I think so. Again, I just say, look at the trends. Dr. Abdul has been gaining steam and has been for the last few months. And as other polls have indicated, the more people learn his story and his policies, such as Medicare for All, abolishing ICE, ending our spending on Middle Eastern wars, as well as spending for Israel's genocidal government, and how he garnered support from the UAW because it said that being a Medicare for All country would help unions from having to haggle over healthcare spending for each and every contract. That's why his numbers are rising. He's doing what I have been advocating for a long time on the show. He's fighting for something. He's fighting for something new. And it's just not the status quo. I saw a Haley Stevens ad this week in which she said,
Israel comes to me in my dreams.
No, no, that, not that. No, and that wasn't even an ad. That was just Haley announcing her Israel First policy from a couple of years ago. No, not that one. But it was another ad in which it stated, and I think this ad, well, who knows who made this ad? I can't remember. It could have been an AIPAC ad, maybe not, but some political action committee that's saying that Haley Stevens would fight to protect Obamacare. Obamacare is being decimated and has been for the last decade. Again, Stevens, like so many countless corporate establishment Democrats through the years, says that they will fight their darndest to protect a program. That means the program will still suffer death by a number of cuts until it's ultimately dead. It's time for Democrats to stop protecting something. It's time for Democrats to propose a new and real future, some new and real programs to help the working class, a working class that has been getting decimated through the years. Stop protecting and start creating. Leftoflansing@gmail.com is my email. I can't wait to talk with this week's guest who's running to become Michigan's first Democrat to win the 38th State Senate District in quite some time. Delta County Commissioner and working class fighter Kelly Van Genhoven will join us here in a few to talk about her run for that Senate seat, which is an open seat this year. And if Kelly wins, she will become the first woman to win a campaign race in the Upper Peninsula. So Kelly will join us here in just a moment. So the Iran war, is it over or isn't it? All that and more on this week's edition of The Trump Show. I mean, it's always something crazy and wacky every week, isn't it, sports fans? I'm just tired of this. Well, apparently, we do have this memorandum of understanding with Iran, and Israel is not part of the negotiations. More on that in a quick second. But according to the Associated Press, this memorandum states that while both sides will continue to negotiate terms, all fighting will cease between the United States, Israel, and Iran, and all fighting between Israel and Lebanon will cease and desist as well. Now, I'm not sure how well Israel's deranged and genocidal government will agree to such terms since those lunatics are still bombing and attacking Lebanon as I speak, but the overall MOU also says that the United States will release frozen assets, commit $300 billion for reconstruction costs in Iran, and the U.S. will end its blockade on Iran, while Iran will give safe passage to ships in the Strait of Hormuz. Meanwhile, the two sides will continue to negotiate here for the next 60 days. And yes, there will be a stupid signing ceremony over this memorandum while no final deal is in place. I mean, I thought that's why you have signing ceremonies, is when a final deal is exactly in place. But whatever. It's always about the show. It's always about the show. And look, there was nowhere else for the Trump regime to go in all of this. Nowhere else for them to go. They were trapped, and Israel's right-wing government led the regime right into that trap. Iran could have kept this war going and limited any ships to get through the strait, which has caused gas prices and fertilizer prices to soar and also helped lead to massive spikes in this country's inflation numbers. Iran could have just sat back and done nothing. I mean, that's what I could never understand with this whole thing. Why would dear leader go through a war on Iran that caused inflation to jump? Usually when it comes to the economy, the president doesn't exactly have all the power to make an economy succeed or fail. But we just saw in real time how one decision could change this country's economic direction. But he was the smart one, remember? The smart one, a businessman. But I could never understand, why did he go through with this? Because Israel said so? I mean, I can't think of any other sane, and logical answers, since the result in this war led, again, to spikes in gasoline prices and grocery items as well. I mean, it was dumb. And unlike Dear Leader, I was not shocked to learn that the word dumb has a B at the end of it. But it doesn't seem like getting Iran's uranium is of real importance, nor does it seem like getting full regime change really matters anymore. That's what we were told all of this time, right? And now we're flooding Iran with $300 billion. Now, I recall also being told by Dear Leader and MAGA Republicans how stupid Obama was to release over $150 billion in Iranian money, money in which we sanctioned as part of Obama's Iran nuclear deal a decade ago. And now, here's Dear Leader coughing up $300 billion. Everyone, the United States had no choice. The Trump regime had no choice but to end this thing because Iran won. Iran won the game. And Iran knew that once we used up all of our strategic oil supply, we'd be in trouble. They knew Trump would be in trouble. So we've spent over $110 billion, lost 13 service members, injured hundreds of others, killed thousands of Iranians. You know, the people we were supposedly liberating, blew up a school that killed over 100 kids, caused inflation to skyrocket, which wiped out any wage growth gains for the working class. We did all of those things for what? For what? Again, I'm asking you, for what? What was the purpose of all of this? But thankfully in Michigan, the MAGA Republican House leaders, you know, they've got their fingers on the pulse here of the state as they use their muscle to call out the Trump regime and Israel's war on Iran and to call for an end to this war. Oh, wait, no, they didn't do that. Okay. Oh, thankfully, MAGA Republican House leaders are using their muscle to block data centers in Michigan, right? No. That's incorrect information, too. I'm sorry. So what'd they do? Oh, that's right. The MAGA Republican House is fighting not for the working class, but it's fighting to make sure that no one inside the state house calls the Iran war the Iran war. Our good friends from The Still Social wrote on their Substack here this week how another one of our good friends in the state house, progressive representative Dylan Wagella of Garden City, how he was blocked by house officials from using the word war when talking about the Iran war. Okay, so what were we supposed to call this thing then? The Iran mess, the Iran skirmish, the Iran screw-up, the Iran conflict, the Iran fuck-up? What were we supposed to call this? I mean, this is reminding me of that scene in Good Morning Vietnam when Robin Williams, Forrest Whitaker, and Bruno Kirby are going back and forth over who to bring over to Vietnam to entertain the troops. And when Bob Hope's name is mentioned, Forrest Whitaker says that Bob only does wars, not conflicts, because Bob likes a big room. Then one of the DJs suggests, yeah, how about maybe we escalate Vietnam to be an official war so that way Bob Hope could visit? Please watch that movie. It's a classic if you haven't. But what is the point of these semantics? What's the point of this game? Come on, MAGA Michigan Republican man-baby House Speaker Matt Hall. You loved it when drunkard Pete Hegseth slapped Department of War over the Department of Defense sign on its building. You loved that. Why are you now all of a sudden blocking Representative Vigela from talking about the Iran war on his official mailers to his constituents? I thought you guys were all about free speech and telling the truth and transparency. Transparency. By the way, this is how Distill Social reports it. It said that the proposed language in Representative Wagella's mailer referred to war with Iran and criticized Trump for escalating what Wagella called an illegal war. Well, you know, let's be honest. It is an illegal war. Anyway, back to the Distill Social story. It says here that the House Business Office sent Dylan Wagella's mailer back with direct instructions saying, because Congress has not officially declared war with Iran, remove the word war and replace it with conflict. Okay. Representative Wagella promptly pointed out that even Dear Leader himself declared the Iran war to be the Iran war. But as the Still Social reminds us, it's not the first time Dylan Wagella was stopped from speaking truth to his constituents, because back in the fall of 2024, when Democratic House Speaker Joe Tate and Democrats controlled the House, Dylan Wagella was blocked from sending materials that were critical of DTE's influence, undeniable influence in Lansing. It's not even a question. It's not even a scandal to say such a thing. It's not even a controversy. Every voter in Michigan knows that DTE has outsized influence in Lansing. By the way, DT didn't even have to pay any federal income tax for the 12th consecutive year, even though it posted a $1.5 billion profit in 2025. Oh, yeah. And DTE benefited quite handsomely from Dear Leader Trump's slashing of the corporate tax rate, which was extended in the MAGA murder budget last year, if you remember. And then there's this from Michigan Advance's Minna Arshad, who writes, the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act reduced the corporate income tax rate from 35 to 21% and expanded tax cuts, which were then extended by the One Big Beautiful Bill, otherwise known as the MAGA murder budget, that was passed by the MAGA Congress in 2025. Ravan Avi Yana, a law professor at the University of Michigan and former consultant to the U.S. Department of Treasury, told Michigan Advance that Trump's reforms are working as intended to cut taxes for America's wealthiest. Professor Yana said that the big winners were the rich and multinationals. Yeah, you think so? Anyway, you apparently cannot criticize DTE, and you can't say the word war under the MAGA Republican leadership in the State House. Remember, though, remember, please never forget that MAGA Republicans said that they were the free speech warriors. Maybe that was back in the day when Speaker Matt Hall declared in his college days that the South will rise again. Yeah, he really did email that to another person. All right, coming up next, Democratic candidate for State Senate seat 38 in Michigan's Upper Peninsula, Kelly Van Genhoven, will join us. Kelly jumped into the race last year, and you know what? She did have a Democratic challenger, but that challenger dropped out a couple of months ago. So Kelly is well on her way to winning that primary and then taking on either MAGA Republican Representative David Preston or former Representative Bo LaFave. Oh, God, not that guy again. But yeah, she could be taking on one of those two in the general election come this November. Kelly is coming up next here on Michigan's Premier Progressive Podcast.
Helping push a strong progressive message from Kalkaska to Kalamazoo, from Monroe to Marquette, from Detroit to DeWitt, from Trenton to Traverse City. Okay, Pat, I think they get the idea. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. Show archives are available wherever you're listening to the show. Left of Lansing is now on Patreon. You can check out a complete archive of the show and other stellar content Pat doesn't share on the show. Visit patreon.com/leftoflansing. Become a member for free. And check out Left of Lansing on YouTube as well. Now, here's Pat Johnston.
Leftoflansing@gmail.com. Of course, if you'd like to leave comments on anything that's said here, or if there's a topic that you'd like to cover, or if there's something maybe you believe that I should have, somebody that I should have on the show, just let me know. And that again is at leftoflansing@gmail.com. Of course, you can leave comments on my socials or on YouTube, or of course on Left of Lansing's Patreon page as well. Okay, let's head back again to the UP because that's what we've been doing here this week, as things are quite interesting up there in a number of ways, and that's why I wanted to check back in with our good friend of the show, Kelly Van Genhoven. Kelly took on the MAGA majority on the Delta County Board of Commissioners a couple of years ago and not only defeated the chair in a recall, but then won subsequent re-election. She's an organizer, a champion for local politics and causes, a message maker, someone who doesn't just sit around and wait for things to happen. She's someone who plays offense for the working class in her area for many, many years, and who's also running as the Democratic candidate for Michigan's 38th Senate District, as she is hoping to turn that district from red to blue. And even more than that, with everything I just said, Kelly's just a good person. So I'd like to welcome Escanaba's Kelly Van Genhoven back on Michigan's Premier Progressive Podcast. Kelly, welcome back.
Oh my gosh, thank you for having me. What an introduction.
Well, look, I follow you on the socials, and, you know, if I can be honest with you and sincere, I just have to say, it really appears to me, and I'm guessing, obviously, to many others, that you are just simply having a great time campaigning and being out there with the people.
I am. We are a people-powered campaign, and my goal was to bring the power back to the people with this race, and we're working it to win it. We hit the ground running last August when I declared to run for this race, and as you know, the 38th District is 13,500 square miles. It covers 13 entire counties and two partial counties for a total of 15, and we are nonstop, and we will continue to be nonstop. stop until November.
All right, so you have to cover a little bit of ground when
just
you're traveling
up
there.
Just a little.
For instance, like what's been a daily week for you travel-wise?
So a typical week for our campaign can be anywhere from 3 to 6 days on the road. We have meetings scheduled everywhere with people. It could be anywhere from 2 people to 50 people. And of course, still being an active county commissioner, I have to take time to be able to do that as well.
Yeah, that's right, because you are still on the Delta County Board. So, Kelly, I mean, you are busy and you are still focused. While you're focused on everything that's happening in the entire 38th Senate District, you still have to remain focused what's happening just in Delta County. Maybe that can run into this question then. What kinds of lessons have you learned in the local sphere, being on the Delta County Board, that you are now taking to the entire 38th District?
Yeah, so what I did with my local politics with the race that I ran in 2024 was really get the community involved, right? Educating the community, involving the community, making them part of a team, making them part of the effort. We tend to have a savior complex when it comes to our local leaders and our state leaders. We want them to just fix everything. And what I've been doing throughout this entire process is going across the UP and saying, it's not about what I believe in or what I stand for. I need to know what's important to you. And I need to know how to fix it. And you are the people who are in it every day. You are the experts in your community. You need to tell me what I need to do. And it's a completely different approach. We are forming teams throughout the UP who are experts in the areas that I want to focus on, bringing our government back to the people, for the people, because I feel that our priorities have shifted in the UP from one of that where we can focus on people and people's priorities with things such as like housing, rural health care, mental health care, our public school infrastructure, things that affect us every day that are getting pushed to the side for other topics and other issues where we're seeing our leaders getting their pockets padded. And we saw that at the county level. Our leadership was doing what they wanted, not what the people wanted. And it culminated with the firing of our administrator. And here we are 2 years later, we have our administrator back. She's been back a year now. It's one of my biggest accomplishments of being a county commissioner was being able to get her back in her seat that she rightfully belonged in. So we're taking our small little plan that worked for a district in Delta County. We're taking that UP wide, and it's been a phenomenal experience. What an amazing experience meeting so many wonderful people.
Right. No, I bet. You know, in case there are some who don't really know your complete story, though, Kelly, if you don't mind, I'd like to just maybe talk about that. And, you know, why I had you appear on the show in the first place a couple of years ago, because I think it points to your strength as a communicator and as an organizer. And I'm talking about how you and others did not like the direction of the MAGA majority on the county board and that direction the county board was taking. Can you talk a little bit more about that central role that you played in defeating them and then winning a couple of elections on your own?
So there was a series of events that I really didn't agree with that happened in 2022, actually. And I decided to run as an independent because, number one, I had missed the filing deadline to run as a Democrat or a Republican. And number two, I really just felt that county politics, for the most part, were nonpartisan politics. However, I underestimated the amount of education that I would have to do to get people to understand what an independent candidate does. And I lost that race in 2022. And then in February of 2023, the three MAGA county commissioners voted to terminate our administrator's contract. She came out at a meeting and called out their corruptness and their inappropriate behaviors and their unethical behaviors. And as a repercussion of that, she was terminated on the spot. She had to leave the meeting, and the community was in an uproar about it. Now, that happened in February of 23, and we weren't able to actually get the recall on the ballot until May of 24. So we had to keep that issue and their inappropriateness relevant for over a year. Of course, they didn't do themselves any favors over the year. They kept doing things that the community didn't agree with. And we were able to recall 3 out of 3 in over a 70-30% majority of all three races. So since May of 24, I have been a county commissioner. I'm the only Democrat on our board. I had a recall in May of 24. I had a primary challenger in August of 24. And then my person that I recalled decided to hop back back into the race for November of 24, and he lost that as well. So I'm still on the county commission. I served as vice chair for 18 months, and I have my hands in everything from airport to conservation to materials management to our UPCAP, the Upper Peninsula Community on Aging Progress. What I do is I involve people wherever I can. I'm really involved in people and development of our communities. And so, yeah, that's where it all started. That's where I am right now. And then we were looking in July of 25 at the fact that we didn't have any viable candidates for the 108 House District and the State Senate 38 District. And with the 38th being an open seat for the State Senate, I decided that I was going to throw my hat in the ring, and I'm so glad I did.
So correct me if I'm wrong. You just said the only Democrat on the county board. And even though this was not a very good state for Democrats in 2024 when Trump won that election and Democrats struggled here throughout the state, you did not. You were able to still come through.
Yes, I think I was the only Democrat that won anything in our area in
wow.
November. Yeah, in the general election of 24, Delta County went 55% for Trump, but my district went 56% for me as the Democrat. So what that showed me was that I was able to peg off some independents, some Republicans. You know, we do have a big mega population up here in the UP, but we also have a lot of centrist Republicans that just couldn't get on board with my opponent at the time. And I'm hoping to be able to peg that off with this election as well. What we're seeing right now is that we have a movement of positivity. People aren't afraid to be Democrats anymore like they were back in 2020 and 2021 yeah. during the COVID pandemic. It's been a wonderful experience. And then, of course, with the development of all the indivisible groups as well, I've been reaching out to all of them, and many of them are independents, and they just don't like the way things are going in our state and in our UP, and they're on board. So all good in this neighborhood.
How would you describe yourself politically? Would you say you're popular? Would you say a progressive? Would you say mainstream Democrat? Centrist? How would you go about that?
Well, when it comes to social justice issues and, you know, the people, I'm very progressive. And the reason why I say I'm progressive, it's not a radical label. It's an essential label. I feel that our people are struggling with their housing. I feel that people are struggling with their health care. I feel that people are struggling with their mental health care. I feel that our kids are struggling in our public school systems. And those are all people-centered things. I feel that our blue-collar workers are struggling right now, and I really want to build back our unions. Strong democratic unions and trade schools are so important. And so when I label myself as a progressive, I want to label it in such ways. I hate labels, first of all. But I will say that because I am so people-centered versus profit-centered, I can say that I'm definitely one of the more progressive candidates.
A working class candidate.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, don't we all want a safe and good place to live at an affordable price? Don't we all want to be able to see a doctor when we need help and something's broken? Don't we all want to be able to have a resource for therapy or psychiatric care if our minds are hurting or broken? Don't we all want our kids to be in safe infrastructure when they go to their schools and have teachers who are knowledgeable and not having to work a second job to make it by? Don't we all want to have like a living wage where we can, you know, promote our unions and build back our middle class? Like, those to me are essential. They're not radical. So I know a lot of people on the right-hand side have put more of progressive candidates in a radical, in a radical circle, I guess you could say, but I'm no such thing. I just want what's best for my people in the UP. And I call them my people. There are people, I love them. I love even the people who disagree with me, right? And we can say that the only way we're going to move forward and be better is if we're able to have those difficult conversations.
You bring up a great point. MAGA Republicans consider it radical to ensure that people can find some decent health care while making decent wages. Right now, they're not able to do that, not just in the UP, but elsewhere throughout the state, especially during this high inflation, as inflation is wiping out gains. The extreme position, I'd say, is being the party to want to continue such policies. But that also brings me to something else that we have talked about here too, Kelly. You just brought up how you love, as you call them, your people in the Upper Peninsula. And I think that goes back to something that we have talked about in previous episodes when you've appeared. And that's how you have been really able to successfully communicate a working class agenda with voters there with people who do identify as Republicans or as independents. But I think you're also particularly connecting with many who just feel disconnected from our government, be it state or be it on the federal side. And I believe that's why you had some success here in Delta County, why you will have success in the 38th Senate District, because of your ability to communicate with people, to make them feel heard, and to let them know that they're not forgotten, that there is somebody out there who hears them and who wants to help make their lives better. Unfortunately, and this is something you and I, again, have talked about in the past on here, it seems like the state Democratic Party has written off much of the Upper Peninsula and just has handed it right to MAG Republicans, which is a disaster. And again, what I like about your campaign is you are trying to reverse that trend. Would you agree with all of that?
I would. What I'm doing is I'm making relationships with people downstate because I think that we've had a very isolationist attitude up here. And it comes from the downstate leadership being complacent when it comes to the UP, right? And I think that's something that really needs to change. I want to see us as one Michigan, not the UP and downstate. Yes, we're divided by a bridge, but that's pretty much all that divides us. And I don't think what we've been doing over the last two decades has been working for us, you know, separating things out, you know, the UP this, the UP that, oh, we need a different DNR, oh, we need our own mental health care system, oh, it doesn't work. Right? It's not working. And I really want to be able to form these relationships again. I went down to Lansing last week and some of my fellow candidates who are also running for Senate, I'm like, have you ever been past the bridge? Have you ever been up north? Do you understand that our rural in the UP is way different than downstate rural? Do you understand that sometimes women have to travel up to 2 hours to deliver a baby? Or I've got elderly people who are an hour and a half for an ambulance ride to the ER having a heart attack. Like, these are things that I don't care if you're right or left. I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat. This affects all of us. And what I get is a resounding like, no, we didn't realize how rural you were. So I'm trying to form those relationships and those bonds so that we're taken seriously again, because complacency on the Democratic side is not going to get us anywhere. I really feel that the Senate is going to stay blue for this midterm election. And so a lot of people have to choose whether or not you're going to want leadership that's in the majority or the minority. And to have that leadership in the majority to tackle these tough issues is going to be a hell of a lot easier than tackling these impossible issues when you're in the minority. And I think I'm the candidate to do it. I can have those difficult conversations. I don't agree with everything the downstate legislature does. And we're going to make an impact when it comes to 2026.
That complacency that you're talking about, it still kind of boggles my mind as to why that happened in the first place, considering as we were growing up, the Upper Peninsula was, you know, considered at least a light blue.
back
in the day.
Well, and that's the thing is that we got so used to the UP being blue that once it flipped red, you know, we were like, what the hell? I mean, basically, right? Our Senate district, the 38th Senate district, was formed in 1965. And from 1965 till 2010, it was solid blue. We only had Democrats in office for the 38th district. And when it flipped red to Tom Casperson for two terms and then stayed red for Ed McBroom for two terms, everybody's like, oh, it's a red stronghold. Well, I look at it as absolutely not a stronghold. I look at it as this is what happens when people make assumptions and don't work and don't make the effort. You know, they just say, oh, well, it'll stay blue. Right. And it didn't. And then people are like, oh my God, what are we going to do? We don't know how to get it back blue. And so I was like, well, I'm going to give it a shot. I'm going to take what I did in Delta County and District 4, and I'm going to take it UP-wide. I think we're making some headways. I have a very good relationship with Brian Irizarry, who's running for the 110th House District. I have a good relationship with Anna Aho-Rink, who's running for the 109. We have Rachel Keyes, who's now running for the 108. We have strong Dems that could take these races if we're going to put the effort in. But it's going to take the effort of all of Michigan, all of us, downstate and up here, to flip those seats blue. And people are starting to pay attention. It's wonderful. It's
Yeah.
wonderful.
Well, you've mentioned how you are a big supporter of unions. Why have you always backed unions there, Kelly?
Oh my gosh, I'm born and bred union. It's in my blood. So, my grandfather was a union bricklayer. My dad was a lifelong boilermaker with 169. My husband has been a millwright, a boilermaker, and now is with the Steelworkers Union. My daughter works for NPR in Washington, D.C., and is a part of their union as well.
Oh.
And while I've never been able to have a job where I could hold a union card, I really advocate for our county employees, both union and non-union. But I sit on the union negotiation committee with another county commissioner, and I've been able to advocate and been able to successfully get our union some really good contracts, and realizing that we're all on the same team. Right? We all want to be able to move forward. And instead of making it difficult, right, we can sit down and we can have those conversations that sometimes are uncomfortable and sometimes we don't see eye to eye, but we make progress. We compromise, we collaborate, and we get it done. And one of my biggest accomplishments, which I was so proud of, was that we were having a really hard time retaining our corrections officers within our Delta County Jail. And it's because they weren't getting paid enough. And so they had had a really hard time with contract negotiations. And they brought me in because I'm the chair of our personnel committee. And I said, I really want to be on this negotiation because it just seems to not be going very well. And I was able to get them what they wanted, not in the time frame that they wanted it, but I was able to get them what they wanted. And it completely has stopped all turnover of our corrections department. And so it's something I'm very proud of. I've been able to obtain endorsements through the UAW, the USW,
Yeah.
and Teamsters. I'm working on some other ones through various labor unions as well. And I just feel it's the way we're going to build back the middle class. I will say this, up in the UP, 60% of union membership is Republican. And they have a hard time understanding that they are the union, right? Our people that are in these unions are the union. You don't label the union as something that's this untouchable thing. They are the union. So if they're unhappy with something in the union, they have the power to change it. And I think people are starting to wake up. I think it's a good thing. It's going to be very interesting come November, I will say that.
So if there was a ever renewed push to make the state right to work for less, you would always be a vote against that.
Oh my God, yes. And
I knew that.
oh my God, yes. Like I said, I'm always willing to collaborate and I'm always willing to compromise, but there are certain social and economic issues that I'm not willing to bend on, and right to work will never happen on my watch again. I'll make sure of that.
That was a setup question, I know, but just wanted to make sure, just for everybody who's listening. I saw an interview that you did for WJMN, I think Local 3, up there back when you were running your recall campaign against, I think this was back in 2024. And one issue that you talked about, Kelly, back then, that is still an issue today, and you talked about in some detail, was your concern of unaffordable housing in just Escanaba. I've talked with progressive Democratic congressional candidate Kyle Blomquist lately, and he's running for Louisiana Jack Bergman's seat up there in the UP in Congress, and he's also focusing on affordable housing. So I guess that is leading me to conclude that it remains a major issue in the Upper Peninsula, just as it is, of course, across the state, but particularly in your neck of the woods. And I was wondering if you could share what you're hearing from constituents when it comes to unaffordable housing or just how to get affordable housing.
Yeah, thank you for mentioning Kyle. I'm a big Kyle fan, and Kyle has seen it at the city level, like I have. You know, he's from Iron Mountain in the UP, and with me in Escanaba, he's sat on the city council there, and so he deals with these issues. He's an architect, so he knows about building and things of that nature, and so we've had some really great conversations. I have crisscrossed the UP, gone to every county, and it's the number one issue of everybody in every county. But I will say this, there's different issues within the housing realm. There are affordability issues up in Marquette. They're having issues with landlords, unresponsive landlords, and issues going on there. And then I'll go down to the southern UP, and it's not so much the affordability, it's the accessibility. They don't have any housing for middle to low income individuals, no apartment complexes. I mean, we see that in Escanaba right now. We're focusing on building, you know, $700,000 condos when 85% of our population here in Escanaba is below middle income. So we have to get our priorities straight, right? And Kyle and I talk about this all the time. Public housing, we have to bring it back. We have to bring back, you know, affordability. We have to lower the inflation numbers statewide and nationally. And it's going to take people who aren't afraid to stand up and say, this is enough. Right? We have to be able to cut the red tape. We need to be able to fix the zoning issues that we're seeing. We have to give incentives to contractors to stay local. We have to be able to do these things in order to move forward for our communities. When we have elderly who are stuck in their homes because there's nowhere else for them to go, accidents happen. People go unaccounted for. They're not getting the care that they need. And we're here to change it. Like I said, it all comes back to our people-powered campaigns, right? We need to start having our tax dollars work for us again. Under leadership like Kyle and I, it's going to happen.
Obviously, the issue of data centers at the forefront here throughout the state and everywhere else across the country, of course. Just wondering if you could just give us your viewpoints on these hyperscale AI data centers and where you stand and what you would like to see happen here in the near future.
Yeah, so we don't have any in the UP as of yet. And if it's on my watch, we'll make sure that we don't. We understand here at our community levels that we need to have strong ordinances in place, and the UP is not ready for that yet. We need to get our townships involved. We need to get our cities involved. We need to get our counties involved at the planning commission levels to be able to put these ordinances in place, to put these restrictions and these requirements in place when these data centers come in. Are we going to be able to stop them all the way? I don't believe so, but we will be able to make it advantageous for our communities for these data centers to come in. We will be able to potentially make them public owned so that we can see some of the benefits instead of the billion-dollar corporations. There's many discussions that are being had about these data centers, but what I can tell you is that the UP is not ready for them at the planning commission levels, at the ordinance levels, at the very basics of what we need to do in order to protect ourselves. Nothing is more important than our water, our land, our natural resources, and our, you know, wild animals, our wildlife. Data centers are going to impact us, the people who are living here, the most. And so it's easy for someone who lives somewhere far away and is making billions upon billions of dollars with these data centers to say, well, I don't have to look at them every day. I don't have to hear them every day, but we will. And the rural communities really need to get involved. And like I said before, earlier in our interview, this is about educating people. It's about advocating for what's in the best interest of my constituents. And right now, I think we're building these way too fast. I don't believe proper processes are being followed. And I need to ensure, like, I can say, no, I do not support data centers, but there's always got to be a plan. Okay, well, I might not support them, but if they come in, I'm going to make sure that they're following what they're supposed to be doing, right? You always have to have a backup plan. And that's my stance. Do I want them? No. Am I preparing for them to come? Yes.
Here's the thing. We've been talking about the working class just feeling left behind. If there is an issue that you're seeing, I think people who would say that would say they're Republicans, some that would say that they are Democrats, some who come from blue parts of the state, some who come from red parts of the state. What you're hearing from all these communities that are fighting back is they just feel like that they don't have a say late and whatever is happening with this government and big tech bro collaboration that's going on here.
That's absolutely correct. It's about including, right? It's about listening. And if you have an issue like data centers where you want the public to get involved and 90 people show up and 86 people are against it and 4 people are for it and you listen to the arguments, it's not your job to decide what's best for yourself or padding your own pockets. It's what the constituency wants. And I think we're seeing that play out with data centers. And I think that this is going to be a very contentious topic come the election, because what I've been seeing is Democrats are against them. Labor is for them, which most of the time labor is Democrat, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have Republican leadership who is for them, but then you have a lot of Republican constituents who are against them. And so this is going to be an interesting thing to play out for the next year or so. And I'm going to be the listener. I'm going to be the listener. And to me, this is not about money. This is about what's best for our UP.
Am I saying it wrong? I always say data, but it seems like everybody else says data.
I go back and forth.
You know, okay.
Yeah, I do, because, you know, potato, patata, right?
Hey, listen, we're just about out of time. So I just want to ask you one more question. I noticed, Kelly, on your campaign sites that you posted the following, which I guess is kind of like a mission statement for you. And it says the most damaging phrase in our language, it's always been done that way.
Yeah.
Why do you say that?
Well, you know, we always want to be able to evolve. We always want to be able to inspire. We always want to be able to see and listen to all sides, right? And what I have found through any of my endeavors that I've had over the last 20 years, you know, whether it be my small business ownership, getting into city politics, county politics, and now statewide politics, is if I ask a question and the response is, well, because it's always been done that way, I'm like, oh, okay, well, let's try to shake it up. Let's shake up the status quo, because if we just follow things that have always been done that way, nothing will ever change. I think the biggest changes that we've had in our societies, in our government, in our 250 years as a nation has because we just didn't go along with the status quo, right? We didn't just say, oh, it's always been done that way. I think it is a damaging phrase. I think it holds us back, and I'm ready to move us forward. So I'm really looking forward to November, and pay attention to my social medias because I'll be on the road a lot.
And if people would like to learn more about you and help you out with your campaign, how can they do so?
Yep. So they can go to my ActBlue link. It's, you know, secure.actblue.com/donate/KVG for Senate 2026. Or they can go on my website and they can hit the donation link for that. My website is www.kvgforsenate2026.com. KVG is just something that, you know, it's a nickname. It's a little love obsession of mine. People, when they were railing against me when I was going for the county commission, they said, oh, you're Delta County's AOC. And so I kind of, you know, nicknamed myself, and other people caught on to it as KVG. So KVG for Senate 2026.com.
I like that. I'll make sure to post those links wherever people are listening to us here today as well.
I really appreciate you.
Of course. Kelly Van Genhoven, running a people-powered campaign that wants to shake up the status quo. Kelly, thank you so very much for being on again and sharing your story and your experiences up there in the Upper Peninsula. And I'll make sure to have you back on one more time before we get to November, if that's okay with you.
Awesome. Love it. Thank you so much, Pat. You're so awesome.
If you'd like to talk to Pat at any time, his email is leftoflansing@gmail.com. Need to vent about the Trump regime? That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Need to complain about stupidity in Lansing and in Washington, D.C.? That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Want to debate which Great Lake is the best? That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. That one's a fun one. Bye. We'll be right back.
Hey, thanks again to Kelly Van Genhoven for being on, or KVG. I kind of like that, by the way. Very catchy. You know, she had to fight to get to where she is in her district because at first, some establishment types were backing her opponent. But you see, KVG, like other progressive candidates like Kyle Blomquist, who's running for that first congressional seat in the UP, or progressive William Lawrence in the 7th Congressional District around Lansing, or progressive Aisha Faruqi in the 11th Congressional District, that's Haley Stevens' soon-to-be old district, KVG has strong community backing and support in her district because she's always been there. She's always been a fighter for her people, her working class people, and KVG doesn't back down from her principles. Like, you know, she stated on her support for unions and why she never back right to work for less. I knew she wouldn't. But if there's one part from our interview that I didn't really get a chance to delve into a little more due to time purposes, since I don't pay for premium charges on Zoom, it's when we were talking about data centers. KVG said that on one side, you've got Democrats opposing them, but unions supporting data centers, whereas on the Republican side, you've got voters opposing them, but Republican leaders backing them. And she is right about unions. And sometimes, let's be frank, that's where unions and Democratic base voters, I mean, the rest of the Democratic base vote, I mean, is just split when it comes to jobs versus the environment. We get stuck in those places sometimes. But as for Democrats, I'd say some Democratic leaders are backing billionaire tech bro data centers quite enthusiastically, like Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer. And during that groundbreaking ceremony for that hyperscale AI data center in Saline with all those AI billionaires, Whitmer was overheard on a microphone saying something, and it really did sound like she said this to Oracle's Clay McGurk. It sounded like that she said, "We're used to people saying fuck no and then doing it anyway." That's doing the exact opposite of what progressive Kelly Van Genhoven says that she's doing in the UP. She's actually listening to the concerns of her working class constituents. And just like she said, she's not going to keep doing things because that's how they've always been done. Giving everything away, giving massive tax breaks to corporations, giving massive tax breaks and tax incentives to billionaire tech bros in their data centers is not the way. That's just still doing things the way they've always been done. By the way, just remember, not only is Whitmer backing data centers, but this is also an overall push by the Trump regime to please the corporate authoritarian tech bros who helped him greatly in the 2024 election. This is an example of the elite political class, the Uniparty, working with the corporate authoritarians. This is why the working class is following KVG's rule of wanting to try something new. They are just tired with doing things how they've always been done. You know why? Because they continue to get further and further behind while the elites, the Epstein class, continues to get richer and more powerful. I'll provide links to Kelly's campaign and socials wherever you are listening to this week's show. Time now for the LOL Weekly Web Poll. Well, you heard Ms. Van Genhoven and I talk about if it's called data or data. So that's my question to you. When referring to data or data centers, how do you say data or data? Do you say data or do you say data? Or both? Vote on the LOL Weekly poll on Twitter, also on the YouTube page, or on Left of Lansing's Patreon page. Time now for the Left of Lansing last call. All right, a recent Safe Home survey shows that Michigan received an A grade and declared Michigan as one of the safer states for the LGBTQ+ community. Nevada received the survey's only A+ rating, while West Virginia scored the lowest for all of the states. You know, I recently traveled through West Virginia, and it's got some beautiful areas for certain. But like a lot of Appalachia, it's just stuck in the past and voting for candidates who continue to keep it stuck in the past. And we've got that same issue sometimes here in Michigan. But while I've got my criticisms for Governor Whitmer and for some of the Democratic leadership here in Lansing, when they did hold the trifecta, Democrats did pass bills expanding the rights of LGBTQ+ Michiganders. And in fact, that's what the Safe Home survey explains as to its reasoning to giving Michigan an A grade. The Lansing State Journal says the survey points to the bills that Whitmer signed into law that expanded LGBTQ+ rights in the state's civil rights law. And at a time when Michigan is struggling to keep people here, I always thought expanding protections for the state's LGBTQ+ citizens was a win, not just for morality purposes, which it was certainly, but also a win for economic purposes. But you can always count on the MAGA Michigan Republican Party in Lansing to think the exact opposite. Because for the second straight year, the MAGA-controlled House blocked Democrats from simply reading a resolution on the House floor recognizing June as LGBTQ plus Pride Month. Oh, I do declare. It's actually very Christian to recognize all people for who they are. And it's very American to celebrate this country's diversity and freedom of individuality. At least that's what I thought. But I guess if we're just not celebrating white Christian nationalism, then MAGA Republicans are always going to be against it. Sure, some 149,000 Michiganders have lost their health care insurance thanks to the MAGA murder budget and Elon Musk's Doge. But as long as we block a resolution celebrating those who've been discriminated against forever, MAGA Republicans believe that maybe just enough working class Michiganders will forget how much pain they really are in and that they'll vote for MAGA Republicans again. Huh. When in doubt, always expect MAGA Republicans to do the anti-Christian and anti-American move.
You're listening to Left of Lansing. Music for the show and everything else on Left of Lansing is provided by Wanderbeats. To hear the latest project and complete music archives, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site or subscribe to Space Leopard on YouTube. Now, back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
That's going to do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing. Special thanks again to Kelly Van Kinhoven, KVG, for being on the show here this week. It's always great hearing her voice, and please support her campaign if you can. Coming up next week, the aforementioned progressive congressional candidate for the entire Upper Peninsula, Kyle Blomquist, will rejoin us to give us updates on how his campaign is going. Kyle's in a primary battle to become the Democratic Party nominee, so that way he'll be able to take on MAGA Republican Louisiana Jack Bergman later on this fall. So that's coming up next week. And then I'll talk with Progressive State Representative Betsy Cafia in 2 weeks, as we did reschedule our interview. And the representative has told me that she's got lots to say here in 2 weeks. So please buckle up. Thanks again for listening. And thanks again for all of your support here on Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I greatly appreciate it. Until next week, remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
You've been listening to Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. Left of Lansing was produced by Pat Johnston, brainstormed by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston, and yes, hosted by Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. Thanks to our good friend Rich for website assistance, and thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. We thank Audio Boom for publishing the podcast every week. Visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to Michigan's premier progressive podcast, and we'll talk with you again next week.